This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. I've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio drama for you this week, beginning with Theatre Royal. We'll hear the May 9th, 1954 episode titled Half an Hour. After that, it's The Diary of Fate and The Entry of Philip Vale, their episode from June 1st, 1948.
The National Broadcasting Company present, transcribed, Sir Ralph Richardson in Theatre Royal.
This is Ralph Richardson. Our play today is Sir James Barrie's Half an Hour. It was originally written in the form of a one-act play, and so it lends itself easily to our purpose. Barrie invariably wrote his stage directions in a personal and descriptive manner. I don't think I can do better than to borrow from his own stage direction to make the introduction. I myself shall play the part of Richard Garson in Sir James Barrie's Half an Hour. The place is London, and the time, a more leisured age than we know today. Mr. Garson, we can hardly call him the hero of the story. Mr. Garson is a financier, and his young wife, Lady Lillian, live in a mansion near Park Lane. Later this evening, they will be entertaining guests there. But now, they are alone. They're in the middle of their periodic brawls. He is being insensitive, as usual. She is being provocative, also as usual. In fact, it is not a very pretty scene.
Why don't you strike me, Richard? After all, I'm only a woman, and there's no one within call.
A woman, you useless thing. That's just what you're not.
How strong you are, aren't you? No wonder I love you. Look how you've crumpled my frock.
Well, you certainly asked for it.
Did I? You know, I can't make up my mind whether green is really my colour. What do you think? What colour do you best like to knock me about in?
You mind what you're saying?
Well, do you mind telling me what all this scene has been about?
Oh, I can't even remember. Anyhow, what it matter, what it was that started us off, something always does, and in the end, we end up by saying exactly what we think of each other.
Of course, but we know what we think of each other before we start.
Maybe we do. But how many times have I said to that father of yours...
Oh, Pops. By the way, I never heard how much you paid him for me when we got married.
One way or another, a good £20,000.
I can't help feeling proud.
If I could have got you for half, I wouldn't have had you.
How like you to say that, Richard. Still, there are other women for whom you could have paid even more. There must have been some reason why you picked on me.
Oh, you rotten old aristocratic family. All so poor and so well turned out. The come-on look in the melting eyes of you and the disdain of you. I suppose they went to my head. You were the worst, so I chose you.
I won.
Oh, you didn't need to come to me unless you liked, you know.
I admit that. It was your money that brought me.
Quite so.
I'm sorry, Richard, for both of us.
Ah, nonsense.
You must at least allow I never pretended it was anything but your wealth that drew me.
I never wanted it to be anything else.
I'll like you again. Perhaps that's even some little excuse for me. Not very much.
Soft sawder.
I dare say. Why don't we end it?
Do you know who you're talking to with my name in the city?
Oh, of course. But if you won't, Richard, has it ever struck you that someday I may?
You? Never.
You have a mighty faith in me.
Mighty.
May I ask why?
Isn't it obvious? You know why. That expensive little heart of yours you can't afford to. You're too fond of my money.
I see.
Tragic, your lot, isn't it?
More tragic than you understand.
Bought you when you were too young to know what you were doing.
Not so young, but that I should have known.
Such a rare, exquisite creature, too, as you know yourself to be.
But I know I'm not, but as I long to be, and as I think I could be.
As you think you could be, if you'd married a better man, I suppose.
All right, mock me. You have the right, but it may be truer than you think.
That's what they tell you. I've no doubt.
Who tell me?
Those young cubs who live on your father.
If I was to let them tell me what they would like to say...
Ah,
then...
but they do, my pet. And when they've finished, you tell them they mustn't say things like that. And your lip trembles and one sad tear sits in your sweet eyes. The same little tear that comes when you've overdrawn your allowance.
How you read me.
I think so. I think I know the stuff you're made of. I wouldn't try any heroics, Lillian. You can't live up to them.
Oh, I haven't the courage, I suppose.
Oh, you've the sort of pluck that let the French jack-o'-dandies go tripping to the guillotine. And perhaps my breed hasn't. When it comes to living, you've got to live on us, my girl, and make the best of it.
Oh, if only I...
If only you were to show me that it were. I'm not nervous. In the end, you'll always be true to number one. I've thought you out that far, at least.
And supposing I did show you.
If you did... If you tried to play any game with me, well...
Would it be the knife, Richard, or Desdemona's pillow?
You brought any shame on me, before I put you to the door, I'd break you.
You're hurting. If I did it, I wouldn't be here to break.
I shouldn't advise you to be, Lillian.
Unless you wish to do the breaking now, please let go of my wrist.
Come in.
Excuse me, ma'am. May I draw the curtain?
Yes, sir.
Dinner at 5:30, I suppose.
I suppose so.
Jane, send me a whiskey into the billiard room, will you?
Yes, sir.
Jane, leave the curtains now. Attend to the whiskey.
Very well, madam.
Richard, when you read this, you will know that I've left you forever. I've known for a long time the love of a man that I can really respect. Not rich, as you are, but a man who asks nothing more of life than that I should be with him. He's asked me to go away with him, far away, to Egypt, and I've made up my mind to do so. I wish you to know his name. It is Hugh Peyton. When you've divorced me, I hope to be his wife. Lillian. I'm leaving the emeralds in the drawer of your desk with this note. I do not wish to have anything with me which might remind me of your unkindness. Ten past eight. Just time to catch him before he goes for his train.
What is it, Susie?
You'll be stamping at me, sir, but there's a lady.
A lady?
I told her you were finishing packing and going away to Egypt, but she would come up.
Lillian. Oh, my dear.
No, you please listen to me first. You see, I've changed my mind and come after all.
My darling.
Yes, I'm here to go with you. You'll have me still. But, oh, Hugh, let there be no more mistakes. Don't have me, dear, if you'd rather not.
Lillian, dearest.
This isn't really a shock to you, is it? You don't despise me in your heart for coming?
Dear, my dear.
I'm sure you're so fond of Egypt, perhaps it'd be lovelier for you to go back to it alone.
Egypt without you? Horrible.
Well, after all, you were going, dear. Was it seeming horrible before I came?
Oh, darling, it would be inconceivable if it wasn't.
You sounded cheerful enough as I came upstairs.
Oh, Lillian, dearest, that man packing wasn't me. I only began to be again when you came through that door. But tell me, dear, what made you change your mind so suddenly?
Not suddenly. I longed to come to you, but I was his wife. Hugh, did you hear me say I was his wife? What a lovely way of putting it.
My wife now, and always.
What a things he said to me tonight.
There, that's all over. Did you tell him you were going?
Yes, I left a letter for him in the drawer of his desk with all the jewelry I was wearing, just like you told me to do.
You said in it that you were coming to me?
Yes.
I wanted you to do that. I wanted it to be all above board. I'm not afraid of him.
I said I was going away with you, and I put my wedding ring inside the letter. I've burned all my boats, Hugh.
Darling.
Oh, if it had turned out that you were sorry, that rather not.
What a nice sort of gent I'd be.
He thinks me a rotten, shallow creature. No, don't interrupt. Perhaps I was so with him, dear. What was bad in each of us seemed to call to the other. He said that in any test, I'd always go where my bread was best buttered.
Well, he'll see how wrong he was then when you come with me. Good Lord, look at the time. We mustn't miss the train. Not another word if you love me. Can you snap these catches while I sit on this trunk? That's it. Why, what are you smiling at?
I've just remembered, Hugh. There were people coming to dinner tonight.
I've just remembered something far more important. Woman, where is your trousseau? Oh. Susie!
I've only what you see me in, dear. Here's all the riches I bring you. 4 and 6 pence. Please take care of my dowry for me, Hugh.
You poor dear. But what fun to buy you a trousseau at Brindisi, if not before. Susie!
Are you going to send Susie to get a trousseau for me?
Of course. Ah, Susie. Skip across to the nearest draper's and buy me a trousseau.
What, sir?
Size 5.5 by 1.25. Hurry up now, fly.
Whatever does he mean?
He only means he wants a taxi.
Oh, that? Well, Mother's out and you know what Father is, sir. But I'll get it myself.
Oh, no, you don't, Susie. Not in the rain. I'll be back in a jiffy, Lillian.
He's just bubbling over, miss. And all because he's going off to make dams in Egypt.
Has he been bubbling over for long, Susie?
For days and days. I used to think of him out in Egypt in a very dirty state, till I saw a picture of him all in laundry white and riding on a camel.
The camel goes on its knees to him, Susie.
I don't wonder at it. There was a thing about him in the paper, and it said, the ball is at his feet.
And it is a great career.
For him. But I've just got to make ready for another lodger. That's all the great career there is for the likes of me. I'm thinking there's a great career for you.
How, Susan?
Him. I wonder, would you let me see it? I've never seen engagement rings except in shop windows.
But I'm afraid I haven't got one yet.
You haven't landed him yet? Oh.
All is going to be lovely, Susie.
You've got him.
I've got him.
Lucky you.
Yes, lucky me. Oh, you mustn't grudge him to me, Susie. I haven't always been lucky with men.
Men? Oh, men. Most men deserve all they get. I can just see you and him, though, on your camel.
Ah, there he is.
He's still got his key. It's not him, miss. I think there's something wrong.
Wrong? Oh, quickly, Susie. What is it? What's happened? Tell me.
There's been an accident. They're bringing him in.
Oh, Mr. Payton. Susie, it can't be.
It's him. He was run over.
My name's Dr. Brodie. My poor lady, have they told you?
Tell me.
Your husband, he was knocked over by a motor bus. He ran out of the mews here. It was raining and the driver couldn't pull up on the wet road. He was knocked down.
You.
Mrs. Payton, I'm afraid it's very serious. Very serious.
Tell me.
I must tell you. Mr. Payton is dead.
No. No.
He died as they picked him up.
It isn't true.
I'm a doctor. I happened to be passing. I didn't know him, of course, but one of the people told me his name. He only spoke one word before he died.
My name?
The word was Egypt.
It's going there. Both of us are going. He's gone out for a taxi, so you see, it can't be true.
Mrs. Payton, I'm afraid it is true. Your husband is dead.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal, starring Sir Ralph Richardson.
In 1906, a disaster occurred in San Francisco, California, when an earthquake and fire scourged the city. The story of how the courageous citizens and military personnel worked to put out the fires and save the city from utter destruction is the dramatic subject of Inheritance this week. Have you heard this important series, pinpointing great moments in American history? If not, tune in later for tonight's inspiring historical recreation. Then, for an inside picture of history in the making, hear John L. Lewis, President of the United Mine Workers of America, as he attempts to answer the barrage of questions fired at him by the panel of top newsmen on Meet the Press. All ahead tonight, so keep listening. And why not take a beforehand look at what's coming on your Monday through Friday roster? A longtime favorite is comedian Bob Hope. Now he's making new friends among the housewives circle. Hear the comic every weekday morning when he interviews interesting personalities from the studio audience, reads some true funny stories from listeners, and engages in a bit of off-the-cuff repartee with announcer straight man Bill Goodwin. And Fibber McGee and Molly visit with you nightly, too. All lots of fun. So get into the NBC habit. It's one you're sure to enjoy.
We now continue Theatre Royal, starring Sir Ralph Richardson.
It isn't true. It can't be.
It is true, alas. Mrs. Peyton, I want to help you in any way possible. There seems to be no one in the house but a very useless man and a child. Now, if you could give me the address of any male relative...
You mustn't bring anyone here. You mustn't on any account.
Just to help you with the format. I don't quite... Excuse me, you are Mrs. Peyton. I'm sorry, I have no wish to intrude, but someone must communicate with the relatives. And, of course, an inquiry...
You mean I've no right to be here?
That's none of my business. But you must know what... Pardon me, I won't disturb you any longer.
Oh, no, please don't go. What am I to do? We were going away together. You'll think that wrong, I know.
How should I know?
Well, there were reasons. I was leaving my husband. We were going away together and we're going to be married after the divorce.
I see. Well, you understand that... Well, there'll have to be an inquest. And if you're found here, you may be called on to give evidence.
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly...
Then... My advice is, leave here immediately before I call the police. If they've not been called already. Yes, I think that might be best for both of you.
But I've nowhere to go. Nowhere. I loved him. I risked everything for him. I'm lost.
Those who risk all and lose have to face the consequences.
Very well. I'll go. Somewhere.
What time are they coming with us? Have I time to write a note?
It's 2 minutes short of the half hour, sir.
Her ladyship not down yet?
I believe not, sir.
Well, she isn't usually late. I didn't hear her in her room, come to think of it.
Shall I send up to inquire, sir?
Oh, no, she'll be down directly, no doubt. I've just got to write a note before the guests arrive. They know there'll be three tonight with us?
Yes, sir. Oh, they're here, apparently, sir.
Oh. Well, I'll write this later, I suppose. Here, give me those papers with us. We'll put them in here for now. What the devil? Good heavens. Lillian's emeralds. What on earth are they doing in this desk? She must have shoved them in the drawer and forgotten them, I suppose. Her all over.
They're here, sir. Is that all, sir?
Yes, that's all, thank you.
Mr. and Mrs. Redding, sir.
Ah, glad to see you both. Come in and get warm. Lillian will be here in a minute.
You seem to be having a little joke all by yourself, Carson.
Look what I found.
My eye. Where did they come from?
In the desk. I put my hand in a drawer for some papers, and I found
these instead.
Well, all I can say is, let's go halves.
Silly man. They're Lady Lillian's. I'd know them anywhere. Beautiful emeralds.
The joke is, I see it now. Why my wife's late for dinner?
No, no, no. It's we that are early.
She must have shoved them in the drawer there. Her set are more careless than ours, you know. And then forgotten where she put them. I bet she's searching high and low for them at this moment.
Oh, the poor dear. I suppose some servant had found them. Or that awful man who winds the clocks.
Well, they're safe enough now. I'll take care of them.
Dr. Brodie.
Ah, here you are. Very pleased to see you in my little place, Brodie.
Thank you, Garson. Lady Lillian, I'm honored.
No. This isn't Lady Lillian.
Would that it were, Dr. Brodie.
Oh, come.
Dr. Brodie, this is Redding.
Oh, how do you do?
You and Redding have met at the club, of course.
Yes, to be sure.
Yes. I forgot you didn't know my wife, Brodie. She'll be down in a moment. I must apologize for her being late.
Now, don't fuss, Mr. Garson. Dr. Brodie knows what women are.
No, not I, Mrs. Redding. But I was afraid I would be late myself. A very strange thing happened just now.
Why, what was that?
An accident in the street. Man knocked over by a motor bus. Not far from here. Killed.
Oh, rough luck. What, did you have to do anything?
Yes, I did. He was living just around here. Seems to have been an engineer or something. Done some good work out in India, they told me. Peyton was the name. Did you ever know him by any chance?
Peyton? It was Hugh Peyton who we met once at dinner who... Oh, no. Egypt was his place.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not India. It was Egypt, she said. Yes, probably the same fellow.
Was he married?
No, not married exactly. Poor devil.
Oh, surely better in the circumstances that he wasn't married.
Oh, much better.
You said poor devil.
Did I? I was thinking of something else.
Of the lady, you mean?
Did I say there was a lady?
You're saying it now.
Yes. There was a lady, all right. She was married, she told me. She'd just left her husband, run away from him that very hour. In fact, she and Peyton were on the point of going away together. The bags were packed, everything. In fact, he was looking for a taxi when he was knocked over.
So she was leaving her husband, was she?
That's what she told me. And the most extraordinary thing is that the husband didn't know she'd gone.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Everyone do forgive me.
Ah, there you are. You're very late, Lillian.
I know. Dear Mrs. Redding, I'm so ashamed. Forgive me, kind Mr. Redding.
All I can say, Lady Lillian, is that you're worth waiting for.
Oh, and this...
Yes. How do you do?
My wife at last, Brodie. I forgot, Lillian, whether I mentioned that Dr. Brodie very kindly promised to take pot luck with us.
No, but I'm so pleased, Dr. Brodie. Any friend of my husband.
Thank you, Lady Lillian.
He's been telling us such a shocking story,
oh,
Lady
no,
Lillian.
It'll spoil my dinner.
Oh, not quite, I hope, Redding.
No, not quite.
A man killed in the street. Tell her, Dr. Brodie.
I'm afraid it wouldn't interest Lady Lillian.
Oh, yes, by the way, it would. You remember him, Lil.
Was it someone I know?
Peyton was the name. Hugh Peyton, I think. Wasn't it at the Rossiters we met him, wasn't it?
Was he a barrister?
No, some sort of an engineer. He worked abroad somewhere, Egypt, only in a small way, I believe.
A dark man, wasn't he?
No, fair. Evidently, if you ever knew him, Lady Lillian, you have forgotten him.
One meets so many.
Just so.
There was a woman in it, Lady Lillian. Do get him to tell us about her. I'm sure there's a scandal in it somewhere. Ask him to tell us. Why not?
Very well. I assure you, I pitied her when I thought she was his wife. And still more when I found out that she wasn't. She kept crying, what could she do?
Runs away from her husband, gets her lover run over. She can always run out and get her some new ones, can't she?
Oh, look here, Garson.
What a sentimental fellow you are, Brodie. That kind can look after themselves all right. After all, she told you she was married, didn't she? Well, by Jove, supposing she just bolts back to unsuspecting number one, her husband, I mean.
Oh, Lordy.
When she left the house at my request, I couldn't have thought so despicably of her as that.
Is it more abject than my husband's other end for her? It would have to be one of the two.
Yes, it would have to be one of the two. But to go creeping back to her husband as though nothing had happened, that would be too much.
Oh, it's quite possible, you know, Garson. Don't you think so? I say, though, that'd be making a pretty chump out of the husband, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no doubt. All the same. It has a funny side to it, you know. Don't you think so, Brody? It has its humorous side, you know.
Oh, yes, yes, I can see that, Garson. But I wasn't thinking about the husband as I walked here. I was thinking about the woman, picturing her in dire desolation.
Don't you think she may be in dire desolation still?
Thinking it over, Lady Lillian, no. I've come to the conclusion that your husband is right, and that I was a sentimental fellow wasting my sympathy on her.
Exactly. We don't need to worry about her, I think.
Dinner is served.
Dr. Brody, will you take Lady Lillian in?
I shall be honored.
Oh, by the way, Mr. Garson, you were telling us about Lady Lillian's emeralds, remember?
Oh, but of course. Why, hello, Lil. You haven't got them on tonight. I thought you got them out of me, especially to go with that dress.
Well, no, I...
Well, where are they? I was talking about them to Mrs. Redding before you came in.
I took them off down here earlier on and left them for safety in one of your desk drawers.
Oh, which one?
That one.
Ah, better open up and put them on again, hadn't you? I like you in them, you know.
I remembered them when I was upstairs dressing, and then I forgot them again. Yes, here it is. My emeralds. The emeralds have gone. They're not here, but they should be. I left them here only a little while ago. I know I did.
What, you say they're gone?
Richard, what's to be done? My emeralds, I know they're in this drawer.
Gone? Send for the police at once. This is very serious.
I know they were there. I know. What can have happened to them? Mr. Garson, how can you keep it up? Don't you see the poor girl's nearly fainting? And I'm not surprised. I know I should. Emeralds.
Come on, Lil. Calm yourself. And let this be a lesson to you, that's all. Everything's all right. It's just a trick I was playing on you. I found them in the drawer just before Redding came in.
There never was a chap like Garson for playing tricks on you. A masterpiece, a real master.
There they are. Put them on. Then let's go to dinner, Mrs. Redding.
Oh, poor Lady Lillian. She looks quite pale.
Oh, she'll get over it. Maybe even more careful with them next time. Hey, Lil? Lil, come on. What are you doing over there? Burning something?
An old letter. Just an old letter. Dr. Brody, shall we go in?
Is no favorites. It could happen to you.
Book 63, page 209.
In the Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. The name Philip Vale. Yes, Philip. In the eyes of the state, your name is spelled in numbers. You live in a narrow cell with narrow men. And there you shall remain for the rest of your natural life. Yet had it not been for a little thing, a trifle, today you would be free and wealthy. Now, too late, you see that the little things are all part of a plan, which once set in motion, continues unwaveringly to the end ordained. And nothing, no, not even I, fate, can alter its course. As this man, Philip Vale, moves through a life now shorn of meaning and stripped of purpose, you who listen may think me unfair. But first pay heed, for soon I will read from his record in The Diary of Fate. I hope you'll understand. The record of Philip Vale now lies open before me. And for a moment, I, fate, look to a single horrible instant.
I've got the bond certificate and...
And what, Philip? What is it?
A surprise. Close your eyes.
You have a surprise for me.
Yes, I do. Come on now, close your eyes.
All right. Just as you say. They're closed.
Tight now.
Yes, in the life of Philip Vale, a surprise was planned. And so was death. But in the last analysis, it was a common, seemingly unimportant thing that determined the inevitable conclusion. An overturned cup. A train missed by seconds. A lost pocketbook. Trivia? Yes. And yet these little happenings are the very instruments I, fate, employ in shaping your destiny. Remember, Philip, how it all started? You were riding on a train, looking out of the window. Remember?
Pardon me, sir. Are you Philip Vale?
Oh, yes, I am.
You're sure?
Of course I'm sure. Because I don't believe I know you.
Well, my name is Remini, Douglas Remini. Here's your fountain pen. You left it on the table in the club car.
What? Oh, by golly, so I did. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Luckily, your name was on it. Mind if I sit down?
Oh, no, not at all. Here, let me move these papers.
Oh, thanks. Cigarette?
Oh, yes, thank you. You know, I'm glad this happened. Traveling alone is very dull.
A little thing. A lost fountain pen. And out of it, a friendship. Yes, Philip. Within an hour, you had learned that Douglas Remini was a wealthy man, an investment broker. And soon the two of you went back to the club car. The drinks you consumed caused you to freely confide in your now attentive companion.
Oh, yes, Aunt Ruth is rich, all right. And one day, every dollar she has will be mine. And I can't stand her. You see, Mr. Remini...
No. Douglas will do.
Douglas. Well, you see, I thoroughly dislike her prim manner, and I despise her Victorian self-righteousness. I'd rather make my money in a good, solid deal. Like the one you just spoke of. Rather do that than wait for Aunt Ruth to die.
You don't sound very concerned for your Aunt Ruth's health.
I'm not. But I'm certain that the sanctimonious Ruth Vale will outlive both of us.
How old a woman is she?
Oh, close to 70.
Uh-huh.
And you believe it or not, she's already been on her deathbed four times. But she always pulls through.
Won't give up the ghost, huh?
No, she thinks death is only for the common man.
And you, Philip, are her favorite. Is that it?
Subject to change without notice, I am.
I see. Aunt Ruth demands someone loyal to look after her and her money.
Uh-huh.
Not a bad job.
Not if I watch my step, it isn't. But don't you forget, Douglas, there are others in the family.
But they don't love her quite as much as you do,
huh? Nobody loves Aunt Ruth like I do.
Water Roof Limited, leaving on track 27 for Albany.
No, we'll have to take separate cabs, Douglas. I'm not staying with Aunt Ruth. It's too gloomy at her place. I'll be at the Raymond Hotel.
All right, I'll call you there in the morning.
Huh?
I suppose you still insist that I take this check?
Absolutely. If you can turn $500 into $1,000 in 24 hours, I want to be your partner.
Yeah, but you don't know anything about me.
That's my risk. Well, you call early tomorrow and we'll have lunch together.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, I hope Aunt Ruth isn't feeling...
too well.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much.
Yes, Philip. Douglas Remini shared your sentiments about your aunt and about money. You had found a partner. The thought comforted you that evening at the Vale home when you talked to the family physician and learned that your aunt was still far from the grave.
I see, Dr. Kopeck. Then as long as Aunt Ruth is in good spirits, we have nothing to worry about.
Well, it's not that simple, Philip. There is danger. After all, she's passed 68 years, and she's led a most active life.
Yes, of course. I understand perfectly.
Good. I'm sure your presence will be atomic. Well, must be on the way now. Good night, Philip.
Good night, Doctor.
We have guests, Philip.
No, Aunt Ruth. Dr. Colfax just left.
I'm glad. Man is hardly sociable with all his idiotic talk about my way of life. I buy his knowledge of drugs and not his shallow philosophy.
Well, nevertheless, you've got to take it easy, Aunt Ruth. Now that I'm here, you must forget about business and just relax. Completely.
Well, not that easy, Philip. I didn't get what I have by relaxing, and I can't make money if I forget about business.
Aunt Ruth, I thought we discussed that thoroughly at dinner.
We did. And I am going to let you run things, Philip, once you've proven yourself. But you still have much to learn, so we'll move slowly from the outset.
Aunt Ruth, can't you ever lose the picture of me as the little boy vacationing from prep school? You know, in 2 days I'll be 35.
Oh, now, don't be impatient, Philip. A sign of poor breeding. You inherited that from your mother's side of the family, I'm sure.
Well, very well, Aunt Ruth. I won't discuss it any further. The results will speak for themselves. I'll get it.
Where is Henry? Why, I keep a butler that goes to bed every night at 9 o'clock and beyond.
Hello?
Is that you, Phil?
Oh, hello, Douglas. Didn't expect to talk to you until morning.
I couldn't wait that long. Wanted to tell you that the deal's gone through already.
So soon?
Yep. You can have your check by noon tomorrow.
What? Pull out now? No, sir. I'll give you a check then. And a bigger one. A $500 profit in less than 8 hours.
What are you mumbling about, Philip? Not polite.
Nothing, Aunt Ruth. Nothing at all. Well, shall we get to work now? The bonds, I mean.
There's little to do. I've arranged with Hoffman to give you my limited power of attorney and a certified check for $20,000. Tomorrow, you simply go to Hepworth and Parsons.
Hepworth and Parsons? Not the railroad issue.
Well, of course, Philip. The railroad issue. It stays. Pays a steady 1.5%.
Are you blind, Aunt Ruth? Are you still living in the 1890s?
Philip.
Today, now. Why, there are half a dozen ways for us to double that $20,000 in
Philip,
less time.
You will get the railroad bonds. My mind is made up.
Honestly, Phil, you're like a kid with a new toy.
A $500 toy.
That's what I mean. Well, I made $15,000 on that deal, and I'm not half as excited as you are. What's more, I intend to do it again today.
Well, give me time. I'll get used to big money.
No, it doesn't work that way. In this business, my boy, time and money are one and the same thing. You've got to have the cash in exactly the right place at exactly the right moment. Oh, by the way, here's your check.
No, you keep it. Reinvest it for me. I like the way you do business.
Well, everyone always tells me there's nothing I don't know about the market. Now, you watch. In a week, the market will be dead.
What are you saying?
That you can make almost dollar for dollar today, maybe even tomorrow.
But after that?
Conditions change, Phil. Maybe a month, maybe a year before I'd move again.
I'm glad you told me that. Douglas, I have a certified check in my pocket for $20,000. Will you handle it?
For 50% of the profits? Yes.
All right, it's a deal.
Yes, Philip, you made a decision. You converted your aunt's check into cash. He gave the money to Douglas. There would be time later to buy the railroad bonds, and your mind was at ease that night when you dined with your aunt, or you could see riches for yourself within the next 24 hours.
Did you enjoy your dinner, Philip? Philip, I'm talking to you.
Huh? Oh, excuse me. I guess my mind was elsewhere.
I've noticed that this evening, Philip, and I don't approve.
Sorry, Aunt Ruth. I've had a busy day.
What did Mr. Hepworth say this afternoon?
Mr. Hepworth? Oh, at Hepworth and Parsons. Why, he thought the railroad issue was an intelligent buy. He said that we should...
Philip, stop that. Stop lying.
What do you mean?
Mr. Hepworth died 13 years ago.
Well, it must have been... Well, I suppose...
I suppose you talked to just anyone.
Yes, that's it. I mean, I didn't know his name.
That's the sort of thing I don't like, Philip. If you're to handle my affairs, you must be 100% thorough. Where are the bond certificates?
The certificates? They're in my hotel room.
In your hotel room? Philip, they belong here, in my safe. Be certain you bring them tomorrow.
Yes, Aunt Ruth. I'll be certain to have them for you.
Yes, Philip. By then you would have the bonds. Aunt Ruth would be satisfied and you would be rich. You were impatient the next morning as you waited in your hotel room for a call from Douglas.
Hello?
Philip?
Is the deal through? Is it over with? How much did we make?
Oh, look, Phil, this is a funny business. Nobody hits it on the head every time.
What do you mean? What are you trying to say? Doug, tell me.
Huh? You lost, Phil. We both lost every penny, but it's not the end of the world.
Not for you, it isn't.
Now, get hold of yourself. I lost, too. Tomorrow's another day, and the market's still ripe. If we can cover ourselves, we've nothing...
Listen to me, Douglas. That $20,000 wasn't mine.
What?
That check I cashed. It belonged to my aunt. I was supposed to buy railroad bonds for her. I never can tell her I used the money for myself. She'll disown me. She'll...
What are you going to do?
There's only one thing for us to do.
Us? What are you saying?
Listen, Doug. You and I are still partners. If I'm discovered, I'm ruined. Forever. She has thousands, Douglas. Hundreds of thousands. And if we're smart, the money is ours.
Yeah, but what can we do?
Only one thing. We'll get rid of her. Kill her.
There was no doubt in your mind, was there, Philip? Now you decided to kill Ruth Vail. Now it was too late to turn back. Soon you would move again. And soon I, Fate, would record another entry in the Diary of Fate. Convinced that your aunt had to die immediately. Even as you drove with Douglas over a deserted back road and discussed for the last time the details of your scheme for murder, your mind ran ahead to the moment when there would be no Ruth Vail, when you and Douglas would be rich.
But how about the servants, and what if she sees you with a gun in your hand?
She won't see anything. I just told you how I'd do it.
You really think you can make it look like suicide?
Sure. I've already called and made an appointment for 9 this evening. I said I wanted to give her the bond certificates and something else. Something I ran across while shopping.
Oh, you mean a present?
Yes, a present. She was almost thrilled, too. You see, from 9 o'clock on, she'll be in the library like she is every night. The butler will be asleep. I'll tell her I have a surprise. Make her close her eyes. Then...
Then you approach without resistance, fire, put the gun in her hand, and then you call for help.
I'll say we argued. The gun will be her late husband. I know where it's kept. I'll say I was at the door when the shot rang out.
Yeah, but why should Ruth Vail commit suicide, Philip?
Because she's despondent, lonely. I refused to live at her place, wanted my own life. So people will criticize the selfish nephew at first, but no one will ever suspect me. And then there's the doctor.
Where does he fit in?
Dr. Colfax is Aunt Ruth's personal physician. His testimony will substantiate her suicide. You see, Douglas, I'm going to talk to him now.
Sorry I kept you waiting, Philip. What's your trouble?
It's about Aunt Ruth. Dr. Colfax, may I speak frankly?
Of course, my boy. What is it?
I'm worried, Doctor. Worried about Aunt Ruth, her frame of mind. Doctor, last night she threatened to take her life.
What?
We had an argument. She, you know how hard it is to work with her. She's so set in her ways. You see, she wants me to take over her business affairs.
I advised that a year ago.
But she simply refuses to let go of the reins.
Tell me, Philip, what happened last night?
Oh, I objected to her half measure. She tells me to use my own judgment, then interferes. We were both excited, I suppose, but it ended with me threatening to go back to Syracuse. Then she said she'd kill herself if I left.
I've known all along your aunt was lonely, Philip, but she never appeared despondent to me.
And she hides under a cloak of severity. Yet the strange thing is that she changes in a matter of minutes. Why, only this morning she called and invited me to a dinner for two this evening. Said we'd be alone, could catch up on the family gossip. She was almost gay, Doctor, and never even mentioned the argument we'd had.
I see. Well, my boy, I don't think you've anything to worry about. Ruth Vail, if I may be blunt, is an unfortunate combination of hysteria and old age. Nothing more, I'm certain.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Doctor. I've been very concerned. You won't say anything about this, my visit, I mean.
Of course not. Don't worry, Philip. Everything will be all right.
Yes, Philip. Everything would be all right. You were certain of that as you sat alone in your hotel room that evening and meticulously rechecked the details of the crime you were about to commit. Finally, you were ready. You descended to the lobby and cheerfully talked, first to the elevator operator, and then to the night manager. When you entered the hotel jewelry store, you were in high spirits.
Good evening, sir. Can I show you something?
Yes, I'm looking for a necklace. Something simple, but not too expensive.
Something for your wife, sir?
No, it's for my aunt. She's an elderly woman.
In that case, may I suggest a brooch rather than a necklace? Now, this topaz crown is lovely.
No, I don't think she'd like that. But let me see that green one there.
An exquisite design in jade, especially fitting for an older lady.
Yes, I believe you're right. I'll take it.
Fine, sir. I'm sure it will make her happy.
Yes, Philip. You were careful to appear unlike a man about to commit murder. You had the jeweler wrap the package attractively after you had inserted a card addressed to my dear Aunt Ruth. Yes, you were thorough. And an hour later, as you and Douglas drove in his car toward your aunt's house.
Now, you sure you know your job, Douglas?
I'm positive. After you leave me at the club, I'll mix and get around, appear gay. When I hear the news, I'll be shocked.
That's it. That's all. Good heavens, of all the luck. A blowout.
Oh, confound it, and a mile from nowhere.
Yes, a little thing. A tire blew out. And now, Philip, your schedule for murder was upset. While Douglas worked feverishly to change the tire, you walked to the drugstore nearly a mile away and called your aunt to explain the delay.
But you're sure you're not hurt, Philip?
I'm fine, Aunt Ruth. It's just that I'll be at least another half hour.
Oh, well, that's all right. Mr. and Mrs. Ballas are here now, Philip. You remember them.
I thought we were going to be alone.
Oh, they'd leave soon after you get here. It was just a business matter.
Look, Aunt Ruth, I'm sort of upset now, being so late, and I'm not sure when my friend will have the tire changed. I wonder...
If we could make it tomorrow night instead. Well, that would be perfect, Philip, perfect. And we'll be certain to have some privacy.
Fine. Well, good night, Aunt Ruth.
Oh, Philip.
Yes, Aunt Ruth?
What was it you got for me today?
Oh, that's still a surprise, Aunt Ruth. A big surprise.
Yes, you still had a surprise for your Aunt Ruth, Philip. But now it was postponed 24 hours. A little thing. A tire blew out. And because of it, Ruth Vale lived another day. The next night you arrived at her house and parked in front of the dimly lighted building. You watched until a few minutes after 9 when the light went off in the butler's room. Then a strange tenseness gripped you as you quietly let yourself in the front door with the key your Aunt Ruth had provided. You stealthily moved to your late uncle's room, and as you took his loaded pistol from a desk drawer, your face was beaded with perspiration. But finally, you were ready. As you walked to the library, your hand opened and closed nervously around the neatly tied package you held.
Who is it?
It's me, Aunt Ruth.
Oh, come in, Philip. I'm waiting for you.
Where are you?
Over here in the armchair. Don't bother turning on the light. It's restful with just the light from the fireplace.
Yes, it is. I've got the bond certificates and...
What, Philip? What is it?
A surprise. Close your eyes.
You have a surprise for me.
Yes, I do. Come on now, close your eyes.
All right. Just as you say. They're closed.
Tight now.
Yes, Philip. You took the only way out. In the cloister of the darkened family library, you fired a single shot. And your aunt was dead. And now, lest any who listen think that I, fate, am without regard for the inevitable equilibrium of the delicate scales of justice, I implore you to pay heed. For in a moment, I will read again from the record of Philip Vale in The Diary of Fate. The same pattern. Yes, Philip Vale, for every action, there is a reaction equal in intensity and opposite in direction. Time and again, your remorse-filled mind goes back to the night you murdered Ruth Vale.
Close your eyes.
You have a surprise for me.
Yes, I do. Come on now. Close your eyes.
All right. just as you say. Let's close.
Tight now.
Turn on the light!
He shot her!
Oh, my God. Look!
No!
Doctor, Mrs.
Bailey,
I saw
him! Yes!
Stanley, what are you doing here? No!
You drop that gun! Drop it!
But... All of you here! Why? Why?
This was to be a surprise party for you, Philip.
Yes! It's your birthday!
Now it is time to close the book. Justice has been served. Little thing. A misplaced fountain pen. A train friendship. A flat tire. A forgotten birthday, which I, fate, planned. All seemingly minor things. But these are the tools with which I work. Yes, justice was dealt swiftly. And now Philip and Douglas sit in their cells cursing me, fate. Take heed and remember, you who listen, for there is a page for you in
The Diary of Fate. Produced by Larry Finley. Diary of Fate is a Finley transcription brought to you from Hollywood.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me. Be back next Tuesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio. And between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, and everything Relic Radio at relicradio.com. There's a donate button there as well if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. The Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.